This is The Full Spectrum. The show provides a wide range of news and competing opinions. The commentaries, beliefs, and viewpoints expressed by segment hosts and guests do not necessarily represent those of WJSU-FM, Jackson State University, or its administrators. The content of this program is for informational and/or entertainment value only and not meant as an endorsement or recommendation in lieu of professional guidance on relevant topics.
It's the full spectrum. We got news, entertainment, interviews, and so much more. It's the full spectrum.
On today's show, an in-depth discussion with the Chief Administrative Officer for the City of Jackson, Dr. Robert Blaine. Welcome to The Full Spectrum for Tuesday, August 28th. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty. It's been a few months since the City of Jackson laid out its strategic plan to turn the city around. I spoke earlier today with Jackson's Chief Administrative Officer, Dr. Robert Blaine, about the philosophy that drives that strategic plan.
The mayor was looking at Jackson and cities like Jackson and essentially talking about economic models that don't serve all of our community. And so there are economic models that are actually based on humiliations of communities. So when you look at things like blight and crime and poor education outcomes, those are all economic models that are based on humiliation. And so the mayor said that essentially that he wanted to create a new economic model that was focused on the inherent dignity of every citizen in the city of Jackson, really saying that there are no disposable communities, but that we have to invest in every single community in Jackson and make sure that we are focusing on the dignity of every human being in the city of Jackson.
So beyond the specifics of a strategic plan, that's the overarching philosophy you want to infuse.
Absolutely.
I wasn't going to start with the zoo, but when I talk to people about the zoo, you have people who think of the zoo as a self-contained entity, and they say, of course the zoo has to move.
That's right.
Of course they're not going to thrive in that community. And then on the other hand, you have people saying, you can't take the zoo out of that community. You need it as a magnet to draw other development. What do you say to those people who say to you, of course the zoo has to move?
Well, I would say that there are models all across the country and all across the world where zoos have been in areas that have been challenged. One of the best examples locally, or actually in our region, I think, is Atlanta. Atlanta's zoo was in a economically challenged area of the city, but they, instead of moving the zoo, they focused on how they could develop that part of the city. And so I think that the long-term strategy is really about how do we create growth in Jackson, as opposed to how do we start to strip Jackson of all of its assets. And so if we're going to play the long game and think about how we're going to really create growth and really create development and sustained growth in Jackson, we have to think about how do we invest in the assets that we have, which means that we have to create the kinds of partnerships that we need in order for that work to happen.
Because you don't have the money yourselves.
Well, I mean, government cannot do it alone. The government is not a conduit to be able to literally alleviate every single challenge that we have in society. But government can be a great convener of bringing together the constituents that are all concerned about an issue and bringing them together in order to be able to create solutions.
So today, the mayor signed 85 interlocal agreements for much-needed repairs to streets and sidewalks. Talk to me about what those agreements will do in terms of changing one of the worst perceptions of the city, that it is full of potholes and a disgrace.
Right. So it's an integrated strategy. The interlocal agreements with Hinds County are actually focusing on neighborhood streets. They're more smaller streets that are going through neighborhoods. The city is actually using the 1% commission, those funds, to focus on the major arterial streets. And so the goal is that between the major arteries and then these neighborhood streets, that we're able to make a significant dent in the thoroughfares of Jackson. You know, one of the real challenges is that essentially in Jackson, we have a $2.5 billion infrastructure challenge. When you look at our water delivery system, when you look at our wastewater and sewer system, and then when you look at our roadway system, a general amount for being able to bring all of those things up to par is about $2.5 billion. We also are under a federal consent decree for our sewer system, which means that we have actually been taken to court by the federal government, and there have been a program that has been set for us.
And remind me what the deadlines are.
Well, there's about a 25-year window, but there are timelines that move along with it that different programmatic elements have to happen. That federal consent decree was sold to Jackson at about $400 million. The real cost of that consent decree is over $900 million. It is highly unaffordable for the Jackson citizens in the city of Jackson. So one of the major accomplishments that we've been able to achieve this year is that our director of public works, Bob Miller, and I have been meeting with the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, in Atlanta. That's where their regional headquarters is for our region. And over the course of this year, we've been able to get the EPA to agree to a major modification of our consent decree, essentially meaning that we go back to court, renegotiate an entirely new consent decree that is in line with the ratepayers of the city of Jackson. So we feel that this is going to save hundreds of millions of dollars for Jacksonians, and it's also going to be able to give us what we are building as what we call an integrated infrastructure plan. If you've noticed, you'll see, for example, a water line break. That water line break will then cause a pothole. Or you'll see a sewer collapse. That sewer collapse will then cause a sinkhole. And so while we have lots of potholes, just holes in the roadway surface, many of them are caused by things that are happening underneath the roadway surface. And that's all about what we call integrated infrastructure. So we have to be able to go in, repair the sewer line, repair the roadway on top of it, and then look to see, is there something with the water distribution system that's wrong there as well, and be able to integrate all of those projects together.
You know, you talked about $2.7 billion, and I can't help but draw a parallel with what's going on with the state right now. You know, they're in a special session to deal with in excess of $4 billion worth of road projects, infrastructure projects there. And they're coming up with what I call like a New Deal kind of agreement here, where they're trying to put a lot of things in place, a lottery, which is questionable right now, but different things to try to deal with this project, which is going to take many years. Is it going to end up being the same thing in the city, that you're going to have to come up with a number of ways to fund that $2.7 billion worth of projects?
Absolutely, yes. We have to have a multi-layered and multi-tiered investment strategy that goes along with this integrated infrastructure plan. So, you know, there's an integrated infrastructure plan, and then there's what we call an integrated financing plan. What that means is that as we build out this plan of how we're going to go through infrastructure improvements, we have to also look at this layered financing plan, which means we have to look at, number one, how do we leverage the dollars that we get in our 1% tax that we've created? How do we leverage local finances, interlocal agreements, money with the county? How do we look at financing through federal programs, Department of Transportation, as well as state financing through MDOT? And so all of these are these layered financing programs. The challenge, of course, is that there are different timelines for each one of those. Some of these are grant programs, some of these are matching grant programs, some of them are leveraging strategies that you have to do with, for example, a tariff like the 1% tax. So we're actually putting together the pieces of how you layer all of those different pieces together so that we have integrated financing that goes along with integrated infrastructure.
We're going to take a break, but we'll be back with more of our interview with Jackson's Chief Administrative Officer, Dr. Robert Blaine. Stick around.
Support of this program is made in part by Griffith Financial Services, helping Jacksonians with their retirement and life plans, as well as critical, chronic, and terminal illness protection. Griffith Financial Services is available at 800-361-6542 or griffithfinancialservices.com. For a consultation today, the More tab is at your fingertips.
Welcome back to The Full Spectrum on Cool and Current WJSU. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty. We return now to our interview with Jackson's Chief Administrative Officer, Dr. Robert Blaine, who was talking about the strategic importance of grants to improve infrastructure in the city. One of the things I recently read about was a federal grant for $1.5 million that you're going to use for new buses.
That's right.
Talk to me, first of all, specifically about that grant, how many buses, and then talk to me about how that fits into that model you just described.
That's right. So Dr. Mukesh Kumar is our director of planning, and he's been working really hard on this work. One of the challenges that we saw coming into office was that our public transit system has had some real challenges. And so he has been rebuilding our public transit system. You'll notice that about 2 months ago, we purchased a set of buses from Kansas City, 10 buses from Kansas City. Those buses have just arrived, and we're actually beginning to put those out on the street now, which means that at any time in Jackson, we need, I think the metric was that we needed, it's 15 to 18 buses in order to be able to run all of the routes. We were, at one point, we were guaranteed to be one or two buses short. And now we actually have enough buses to fill all of the routes. However, we have aging buses. And we also had a program where a few years ago we bought some buses, I think from somewhere in Florida. They were more aged buses, and those buses are now about to reach the end of their useful life. So the big benefit of this grant program, this is through the FTA, the Federal Transit Authority, is that it will allow us to purchase brand new buses that are literally built from the floor up. It will allow us to purchase as many as 5 brand new buses that will be designed exactly for our transit system. And this will allow us to have enough buses that we will have buses in reserve. It also means that we'll be able to do a thorough review of the bus route system. It has not changed essentially since the 1980s. And if you think about it, Jackson has changed dramatically since the 1980s. So we have to go back now and relook at the bus route system, see where are the places that people are trying to go, how do we make sure that people can get to shopping and medical care and entertainment and the various things that people want to do, and have a public transit system that incorporates all of those together. One extra piece is that what I'm really excited about is Dr. Kumar is working on what he's called his one-line program. which essentially is integrated transit program that brings together things like bike share and car share along with public transportation so that we have this multimodal public transportation system.
So you mean like in some other cities where you can put your bike on the front of the bus keep riding?
Or where you have bike racks where you can swipe your card and pull out a city bike and ride it wherever you want and park it in another rack someplace else.
You mentioned something else that I've got to ask you about, the 1% tax, because you always hear people saying, what are they doing with that money? They've been collecting that money. How much has been collected and what are you doing with that money?
Right. So I think that the last time I looked, there was about $21 million in the 1% commission. Of that $21 million, all of it has been allocated for projects. Most of them are large infrastructure projects. There are large roadway surfacing projects that are a part of that. For example, Ridgewood Drive was one of the large projects that was done through 1% money. But we have an entire set of projects now that are ranging throughout the entirety of Jackson. Some of the strategic areas are in South Jackson around Merritt Healthcare, the Capitol Street Corridor, a portion of the Capitol Street Corridor. We, as you know, repaved 75% to 80% of downtown last year as well. And so those 1% funds will go for all of these larger corridor arterial projects.
And to the criticism that you would get from people who said, oh yeah, you paved downtown, but you're not paving out here in West Jackson, you would say?
I would say that we actually are paving West Jackson. the challenge is that I don't think that every resident realizes the pace and scale of municipal government, and it's something that it was a huge transition for me, coming from the world of higher education and where we can be a little bit more nimble than municipal government can. But there is once we identify a project, it has to go out for bid. It has a 3-month bidding process. We have to actually bring in the contracts. You have to hire the contractor. You have to have a scope. And before any of that happens, you have to do an engineering study. There's layers as to how this process happens.
And I understand that. I think the issue, though, is over 3 or 4 administrations, after all this time, it's almost like you have to do some things that people can see or else people run out of patience.
That's right. That's exactly right. Part of the reason that we've, number one, used our first year to be able to lay out an actual plan. When we came into office, there was no integrated plan for infrastructure in the city. And as our public work director likes to say, he had individual reports for individual projects that could stack up a foot high. But there was no way to integrate all of those projects together. This will be the first time that the city has actually done that. And then to be able to take that strategic approach and start to look around the city and to start turning those into projects that are tangible, that people can actually see how we're moving forward. That's the piece that we're executing around now. And so what I'm excited about is that I really believe that in the next 12 to 18 months, people are going to see a lot of investment coming into Jackson. We have about $14 million worth of projects in the 1% Commission that are past the engineering phase, they are past the design phase, they are now in the contract phase, and they are ready, we're ready to put those contracts out to bid. That means that you'll see lots and lots of trucks going down the street repairing streets.
We have a new superintendent of the JPS system.
Very excited about.
Oh, well, tell me why you're excited.
So coming into office, the last thing that we expected was to have to deal with the local control of our public school system. As you well know, the mayor created a partnership with the governor in order to retain local control of our school district. In the 10 months that we've been working, we've been able to work in four different lanes, essentially. The first is around creating a public view of what transformative education can look like in Jackson.
We've got to take one more break. When we come back, more with Jackson's Chief Administrative Officer, Dr. Robert Blaine. Stick around.
You can find the latest news the instant it happened.
Today's big story is always just a click away.
Yet that story leaves just a few questions unanswered.
Like, what does it mean?
Is it really new?
How does it affect me?
Who are those people in the news?
And what about life in the rest of the world?
I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Find answers to those questions when you wake up with Morning Edition from NPR News.
Catch Morning Edition weekdays at 6 a.m. on Cooling Current WJSU.
Welcome back to The Full Spectrum on Cool and Current WJSU. I'm your host, Dwayne Doty. We return now to my interview with the Chief Administrative Officer for the City of Jackson, Dr. Robert Blaine, who's telling us about some of the projects that the city has lined up to kick off. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is the One Lake Project. I'm starting to hear a lot of buzz again, and for listeners who may not know, I would describe it anyway as a flood mitigation slash economic development
Correct.
Project. Mm-hmm. It could be huge for downtown Jackson, and of course the flood mitigation is important, but this has been around for years. Am I right to think something's happening?
Yes. The mayor sits on the Flood Control Board, which is actually the mayors of all of the, well, the city of Jackson and then all of the towns that would actually touch what would be this One Lake. And the goal here is, as you said, flood control, number one, but it is also a major economic economic development driver. From the information that I have, the study has gone through a phase with the Army Corps of Engineers. There has been a considerable amount of federal support for that project. There are, of course, a few studies that they have to complete. There are concerns about downstream implications.
Right.
What does this mean for the folks that are further downstream? While I don't think the project is over the finish line yet, I think it is moving closer and closer to the goal line. And as the mayor has said, we're not biologists, so we have been informed of some of the ecological implications. But we also are very acutely aware of the economic development implications as well. And the mayor has said that Jackson needs to be a strong beneficiary of the economic development initiatives that could come out of a project.
Okay, Dr. Robert Blaine, defend yourself. And I'm sure you can. I just want to throw something at you that you hear a lot. You've given us a lot of information today. There are a lot of great ideas, but I know you have heard this, that this administration is filled with too many academicians and not enough people who have been engaged in government, who know how to run a government.
Yeah.
And I really want to hear from you. I want you to address this. Talk to the people.
Absolutely. So we came into office and our government was nearly $6 million in the hole. We had all city workers on furlough. And in 1 year, we've been able to take the city from a $6 million shortfall to a $7.8 million surplus. We have been able to take the city of Jackson, city workers, from a furlough to a 2% cost of living raise this year. For the first time in two decades, we have seen Jackson grow. our property taxes rose by 0.5% this year. And so Jackson is growing. This has been the first time that we've seen numbers like this in over two decades. And so I would contend that you need some academics, and you might need some folks that have run institutions that are not mired by the traditional thinking of municipal government. Many of our team come from differing worlds, but we have been able to bring a theoretical construct to municipal government that has translated into actual gains.
And part of that construct that you guys have brought, I just went out for a day with the Black Voters Matter bus tour. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that one of the co-founders, Latasha Brown, was talking about was how, and it's a phrase you guys use to describe yourselves, how progressive the government is here, especially in really basing what you're going to do on the input of the people who live here. And
absolutely.
Surprisingly, she says, or not surprisingly, that really is not common.
No.
It's government does what they want to do, and they really rarely take as much time as you guys have taken to get that input. How does it feel to be described that way by somebody who's going around to a lot of cities and feels that this is one of the best models she sees?
It's a real point of pride. The mayor comes from this background of people's assemblies. And so even when we were developing our strategic plan, the mayor came out with this overarching philosophy for the strategic plan. But we had a people's assembly, and we started to break that into five goals. So the first goal was healthy citizens. And that for us meant our consent decree, water delivery, making sure that we have walkable neighborhoods. The second was safe homes in affordable neighborhoods. So we have a community policing strategy. We have blight elimination. We have the effect of blight around schools and the impact of that. We've talked seriously about our elderly community and making sure that they're engaged, all of those pieces. The third goal was a thriving educational system. We have been able to transform the work with JPS that's happened in just 1 year. Our fourth goal is all around opportunities in a growing tax base. How do we have job opportunities in a growing tax base? And how do we create a living wage in Jackson for all of the city's employees? And so even with this small 2% cost of living increase that we're putting forward this year, our trajectory is to be able to create a living wage for every single employee in the city of Jackson, and for that to be a model for all of the private sector jobs that we have. We're also trying to create growth as well. And so, for example, one program that we've started this year is a partnership with Oxfam, the philanthropists, and New Way Mississippi, who actually work with returning citizens, folks that are coming back from incarceration. And you may have heard about us talking about municipal broadband and what we're trying to do with our fiber optic network. We're actually building a training program for the people coming out of incarceration to work with fiber optics. We can give them a job in the city in working with our fiber optic network and build our own fiber optic team here in the city, and then be able to use that as a lever for economic development, for growth in our public school system, growth in our library and hospital system, et cetera, et cetera. And then the final goal is around a city, what we call a city that's opening and welcoming to visitors. How do we have inclusive art and culture that allows an experience for both Jackson's residents and our visitors? So you may have noticed that we came out with a new concert series this summer. Jacksonians came from all over, and folks came from all over the region to enjoy some of those concerts. And so we want to be able to create a holistic city experience that is really about elevating the entire community.
And I just want to say before we end, one of my coworkers, Meredith Michelle, and I, we went to one of the people's assemblies where they were gathering this information. Mm-hmm. And I would recommend people go, because it was quite an experience. And even if you walk away and say, oh, please, I think it's worth going to just to see. I was pleased with giving input and hearing the input of others. Dr. Robert Blaine, the Chief Administrative Officer for the City of Jackson. Thank you so much for stopping by, and we'll hope to have you again in the future.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate the opportunity.
That's our show for today. Don't forget to catch Metro Morning Live with Rob J tomorrow at 7 and again at and again at 10 on JSU TV, Comcast Channel 14. Don't forget, you can catch the live stream of Metro Morning Live on Facebook. Just type in Jackson State TV one word. We'll be back tomorrow at 4 with more of the Full Spectrum. Up next, Latin Jazz with host Dale Morris. Have a great evening.